Hello and welcome to Wooden Spoons on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. My name is John Dick, and I'm here with community nutritionist Mary Jane Eason to discuss topics of healthy living, environmental issues, what's going on in our community, as well as other interesting things in this one-hour show. On Wooden Spoons, we recognize that all things are related, and with learning and awareness, we connect the dots and make up our world. Every Friday morning on Wooden Spoons, we speak with guests on today's relevant issues, share nutritious recipes, and explore important topics with perspectives not found in the mainstream media. Time right now is 8 o'clock, and temperature outside is 15 degrees Celsius. Good morning, Mary Jane.
Well, good morning, John. How are you this morning?
I'm good. You?
Yeah, very well. We were just... I'm with my guests this morning, and we were just chatting and listening to a fantastic Friday.
Oh, nice!
Waiting for the theme song, Wooden Spoons.
Yeah, so, I didn't start it too late, did I?
Pardon me?
I didn't start it too late, did I?
Oh no, no! I barely heard the Wooden Spoons theme song, so I guess. I'm not sure if we missed it or what happened, but anyway, that's fine. I heard some of it.
Oh, okay, so you didn't hear it on your end. Yeah, hopefully it went through on the other end.
Okay, that sounds like a good plan. Anyway, I just want to run by what we're having on about the program this morning. First of all, I want to acknowledge that we are on Treaty 1 territory. And I'm just looking for that little script, and I can't seem to find it. But that, we acknowledge we're in Treaty 1 territory, and that the Cree, Ojibwe, and Cree Nation, and also that we get our water from Shoal Lake. And so these are some things that we always like to acknowledge on our program. And for today's program, we have a guest who I will introduce shortly. Her name is Wendy Bulow, and that'll be for the first part of the program. And then in the second half, whatever's left of it, I'm going to be talking about gluten and gluten-free baking and gluten-free flour and why gluten is a problem for some people. And we will have a recipe as well. So on that note, I would like to introduce our guest. Her name is Wendy Bulow. And she'll be talking about a new way of approaching gardening and landscaping based on the information of Dr. Douglas Tallamy, whose book, Nature's Best Hope, offers alternative and necessary ways of landscaping. Dr. Tallamy has written many books, by the way. This is just one of his books, and he's an expert on the topic of plants and landscaping and so on. So Nature's Best Hope is one of the more recent books, and Wendy learned about and became interested in butterflies and moths through a program titled Butterfly Way, developed by David Suzuki several years ago, and has been working mostly in the community of Donatar in the Interlake region of Manitoba. Today, Wendy will give us helpful information about what plants to grow in order to attract pollinators in our yards and why this is such an important thing to be doing. So on that note, welcome to Wooden Spoons, Wendy.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me on your show.
Yes, and I'm sorry I missed you at our garden party. I guess we just crossed paths.
Well, I had a good time there. It was great until I had to leave. Sorry I missed you too, but it was a really nice event.
And I understand that you distributed information and pamphlets to people when you were there.
Yeah, and I just talked and met people, and that's part of it. It's not just standing in front of a microphone talking, but it's actually discussing issues with people. So we had some good talks. I met some new people.
That's so important.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for starters, Wendy, maybe you could tell us about the work that you are doing and also the educational component of your work and the places that your work takes you. And I understand that your work involves promoting plants that pollinators need to survive. So do you want to talk about pollinators, which, you know, are the insects that cohabit with the plants and why they're so important?
Okay, sure. I'm called a butterfly ranger. I'm a volunteer with the David Suzuki Foundation, and it's a program, and you can look it up online. You just type up the Butterfly Way Project. And so I've been involved for, this is my fourth year, and it's been going a little longer than that, maybe about 7 years. And we've got lots of things to do. We're given education, and so, you know, monthly webinars, and we have fabulous guests come in, and we even had Dr. Doug Tellamy come and give a presentation to our group, and that a few years ago, and that was super exciting. And Heather Holm and some other very amazing scientists. And so what our project is our goal is to create a series of networks through our communities, and we're in Canada. Now, in the United States, they have the program called the Homegrown National Park, and that's basically championed by Dr. Doug Tellamy, and he helps with that program. He's a very busy man. He's a professor and does all these things. So some people that were inspired by him put together this nonprofit group called Homegrown National Park. And you can find it online. It's lots to read and lots to, anyway. So now what do I do? So what I actually do is, say here in Denitar, for instance, we create I've created community gardens that are full of native plants. And we used to have like a bunch of community gardens that were full of petunias and marigolds and things like that. And they look nice, but they're not exactly contributing to the ecosystem. So I think it's important that we bring these plants in and show, you know, encourage people. I've done presentations, and I even did one in Selkirk Gaynor Library about a year ago, and that was really interesting. So, and in Gimli and stuff. So it's kind of what I do.
So you actually have sort of gardens to illustrate the different plants that are indigenous rather than, and you're moving away from petunias and marigolds. I guess marigolds
I know.
Are indigenous.
Well, they're lovely plants too, but you know, what we really need is gardens full of native plants so we can continue with the food web. Like there's, I'm trying to find, I'll find a good quote from Dr. Tellamy, and one of the things he says about his book, Nature's Best Hope and Bringing Nature Home, it was exposing the concept that your plants are more than just decorations, that they're critical components of ecosystems because of what they do. And what we want our plants to do is we want them to feed insects and birds. And a lot of people go, well, why do I want to grow these beautiful plants and have something eat them? Well, that's what we should be doing. Like if you have a plant and it's in perfect shape and it's sitting in your yard looking pristine, well, it's probably not feeding anybody. It's probably not doing anything other than sitting there and looking pretty. So yeah. We want plants to be more than decorations. We want them to be part of, you know, we need them to feed our pollinators, feed the caterpillars and feed birds, and it's a whole food web.
It's a food web, and it's also a relationship between plants and insects, and that's an important thing that we have to understand ecologically. I think this is something we haven't ever understood, really, is that we are in relationship, and so it's important that insects eat plants. And of course, that also keeps the plants under control as well. You know, it balances each other. They balance each other out, I would say.
Yeah, and I mean, very importantly, are feeding pollinators with their nectar and pollen. So they're not only, they may have, like for instance, let's take the monarch butterfly as an example. Its caterpillar lives on milkweed plants only, and any kind of milkweed will do. So we grow our native milkweeds here, of course. So the caterpillar eats that and then turns into a butterfly, and then that butterfly can go around and take nectar from pretty much all kinds of plants. Like once it's turned into a butterfly, it's out there in the world trying all these other plants like goldenrod and asters and so on. Mm-hmm. And it's doing some pollinating as well. And
so it's really helping the plants. It's helping to keep the plants going and surviving.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah, absolutely.
This, yeah. There was a
and actually like this is a little aside, but say somebody's got milkweed plants and these caterpillars are eating all their plants. First of all, that's what they're supposed to do because we want our monarchs. But
yes.
the milkweed plants will regenerate after that. So it's built into them to regenerate and, you know, leaf out again and finish their season. So it's like these native plants and native insects have evolved for so many thousands of years together. So they're intricately connected. So, and one thing I'll say about our native plants and native insects is that some insects are considered generalists and they can feed off many plants. Like they can take nectar and pollen from many plants, but some like bees, for instance, many native bees, they can only take pollen from certain plants to feed their babies, to feed their offspring. And if they don't have those plants, they're gone. So
mm-hmm.
that's part of a big problem is the plants that most, if you go into a garden center and you see all these beautiful plants, well, like almost none of them are from here. It's kind of astonishing. Like, why do we think plants from Europe and Asia are better than our native plants? But somehow we do.
So could you just give some examples of some of these European plants? For instance, I have irises that somebody gave me. I have irises that I have planted at the school.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure that irises are not native, are they?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
some irises are native. And the blue flag iris, fantastic plant. So,
oh, well, I'm glad to hear that.
They've got a native, they're busy feeding who knows what. you know, I mean, I don't want to be too hardcore, so, you know, we don't have to give up our plants we love in our gardens, but we can include native plants. How's that?
Yes, at least that's making an effort. But there's other plants, like I know that, Lily of the Valley. I have these are growing. They're very invasive and they're beautiful. They smell lovely. But there's also peonies. I guess neither of those plants are indigenous and they don't contribute to the ecosystem in any way, do they?
Well, not really. Like I mean, the peonies. I think the ants really like their syrupy stuff. But I would say if you had to choose. Keep the peonies, get rid of the lily of the valleys. That's a huge job, but they are poisonous also to animals. They're a really tough plant because I know years ago before I knew any of this, before I had read Dr. Doug Tallamy's book and had my education from the butterfly way, I was given some by a neighbor and I thought, oh, I love these. My mom used to grow these. So I put them in and spread. And they're so hard to get out, but I do it. And they do go away, finally.
Well, you know what? I'm glad I asked you that question, because if you say they're poisonous, it's not exactly helping the soil in any way. So I should get rid of all the lily of the valleys.
Yeah, I know. It's sad. But we actually have a beautiful replacement for that, and it's called a Mayflower. And they look kind of like lily of valleys, and they got beautiful, delicate little white flowers in, like, different looking, but a little white spire flower in the spring. So I'm here out at Dunnottar, and where I also had some lilies of the valley to dig out, but all the shady understory is filled with these gorgeous little local lilies. So don't despair. They're out there. You just have to change them up.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I asked you that.
But people are very attached sometimes to nostalgic reasons, like I was with the lily of the valley that my mom loved so much. And anyways, that's how it goes.
Yeah, things have some things have to be done. You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM. This is Wooden Spoons, and I'm talking to our guest, Wendy Bulow. My name is Mary Jane Eason, and John Dick is our co-host. Anyway, going forward here, Dr. Talamy recommends a new approach to conservation that starts in our backyards, but it also means changing our own ways of thinking to align with the ways of nature. And Dr. Talamy states that gardening for beauty, without regard to the main ecological roles our landscape should perform, leaves us with a landscape so low in ecological function that it draws the vitality from the surrounding ecosystem. Now, would you like to comment on that statement and maybe also comment on the threats that pollinators face in our modern carpet-like landscapes, and also the landscapes in terms of where they originated and have become established as the norm for beauty. So do you want to comment on Dr. Talamy's statement and also...
There's just so much to say about that. And what I can say, first of all, I think everybody should either read his book, Nature's Best Hope, if you can, or dig around online. He's got lots of webinars that he goes through everything. And for a lot of people, it's much easier to watch something with some visuals. And he's got a really nice speaking voice, and he's a good storyteller. And so very pleasant, yet super educational thing to learn. So one of the things why, like, he's talking about why our plant choices matter so much, and let's see, I'm just trying to think. Here's a quote, and what I was saying about caterpillars. Caterpillars transfer more energy from plants to other animals than any other type of creature. When caterpillars don't have native plants to eat, they won't be around to provide that energy to birds and other wildlife. A landscape without caterpillars is a dead end for the food web. And just to complete the food web, we're growing our plants. Sunshine grows the plants. They're taking that sunshine energy. They're putting it into the caterpillars. Birds eat those caterpillars, and birds continue, you know, keep the food web going. And, you know, with everything they do, birds sometimes eat the seeds, their droppings or seeds. It's just like, as in your show opening, everything's connected. So using the plants that are that Manitoba has here, that's the best thing to do. Did I answer your question? I think I was rambling about some, but we need, let's see, I'll ask the last part of the question again, if you can.
Yeah, because the caterpillars, and they're feeding the birds, and we need birds as well. You know, birds are very important because, well, they're also part of the ecosystem. And so it's just like a circular relationship with one feeding the other and working in harmony. It seems to be so obvious when when we understand that. And instead of having this sort of beautiful yard, which could be actually quite sterile, depending on the plants. And there's also the issue of a lot of our plants that we, you know, import from Asia and Europe.
Yeah.
Do you want to comment on them? Like, what would they be? And maybe we should, of course, when you go to the garden, you know, stores, or what do you call it, where you buy plants, those are the kinds of plants you're expected to get, right? You don't get the indigenous plants in these places.
Not the big box garden stores and most garden centers as well. So I'm just trying to think of all the, because I've stopped buying them usually. Well, okay. What I do buy for our gardens out here are, I buy some zinnias and I buy cosmos. I do buy a couple marigolds and cosmos and zinnias, a couple marigolds, and they provide some really bright color. they go all year round. So I'm kind of answering your question in a different way. I'm saying what I do like. And they're North American plants, pretty much. So I'm kind of bundling them in. But sometimes with your native plant gardens, they're perennials, and they go through times where they're not really blossoming. So we kind of want to have give people who are looking at this garden, I want them to see something familiar that makes them happy, and then look at everything else. And then they can go over and they can see the bees working away on the native plants. And the bees also like cosmos too and stuff. But okay, I'm going to take a bit of a tangent. So when you go into a garden store, it's really important to ask, what do you use on your plants? What pesticides are used on your plants? Okay? Because a lot of stores, they don't, like the big box stores, they might not know exactly what's being used. And there's one pesticide that's extremely dangerous. And if it's used on the plant, do not buy it. It's a neonicotinoid. And there's a variety of those.
Neonicotinoid.
I know. And people call them neonics for short.
Okay.
That's quite helpful. And they're more and more like this insecticide was developed, you know, to try to help farmers. They said, well, you need less of it to do more. So, but what it's done is it's a very powerful insecticide. And a quote from here's a quote from a writer. Neonicotinoids are 7,000 times more toxic to bees than DDT.
Oh.
Yeah, and so it's really like all the work that, you know, with Rachel Carson getting DDT out. Well, now we have this other one, and so groups have been trying to get it banned. We almost had it banned from Canada, but then it came back again. Like they didn't go through with it. So I would say don't stop, keep trying, but. The scary thing about this is sometimes seeds are coated with this pesticide, and if a bird eats that seed, it will die. Like, that's how strong they are. So it's like kind of nuts that it's out there being used, and it's an insecticide that goes inside the plant. Like, it's actually, you know, when they're treated with it, when they're started, the pesticide actually grows within the body of the plant, so that when the bee comes and takes from the flower, it's the pollen or the nectar, and takes that back to the I guess that would be pollen, takes it back to the larva, it's basically poisoning them. So you got to be careful what's in your plant. So the best action is to buy from the more local, the better. And for, I think one of your questions, should I just jump ahead to where to buy plants?
Pardon
me? Can I jump ahead on where are some safe places to buy plants?
Sure.
Without being too...
I think it would be helpful because That's one of the things I would like to know. Where do you get these indigenous plants? You know, I think because, I know that prairie flora, Nin-Selkirk, but that's way out. I'm not sure what their range of plants are. And then there's sage garden herbs, which is really far out as well. And I'm not really sure about that either.
I think, we really need to, like, there's some fantastic places, but you're right. Like, we actually have several places to buy plants that are absolute treasures. Like, there's provinces that don't have anything like this, like Prairie Originals, and they're in East Selkirk, and that's probably the one you're thinking about around Selkirk. So they've got a great catalog online. You can check it out. There's Prairie Flora that's in Toulon, and they actually are having a sale at the Living Prairie Museum this weekend. I think Sunday or something, just check with that. So that's not terribly far, but you can go out there to Living Prairie Museum this Sunday and get some fantastic plants.
And where's the Living Prairie Museum? Is that that's the in, near here, near Pola Park? Is that the...
You keep going west. If you keep going down Ness, you'll find the Living Prairie Museum.
They have natural prairie grass and all that. I've been there.
It's very special. They have a remnant of real tall grass prairie, mm-hmm. and that is rare, super rare. Like with a tall grass prairie, it is the most endangered landscape in the world. That's quite a, it's like less than 1% left. And so that's all the way from around north of Gimli, just north of Gimli, we've got some prairie habitat all the way down through Texas. But it's not much left. So any little bit of it is precious, and they have plants that feed the landscape. And why is this, why is it so important? Well, I guess as humans, we can be very selfish and just say, we actually need our pollinators. We need those bees and pollinators that help us grow our food. It kind of boils down to that.
And I notice that there seems to be a scarcity of bumblebees. Last year I had more bumblebees in the yard. This year there's a small bumblebees. And so I'm wondering, where have all the bees gone?
I don't know. I know we're losing insects, but I hope it, because it's mid-June, maybe there'll be more and more. I don't know.
But I did see amazing, I don't know if you ever heard of a hummingbird moth. Have you ever heard of that, or have you seen one?
Oh my gosh. They are the coolest thing.
Oh, they're so beautiful. And there was one that came in my yard, this past week or a couple of weeks ago.
Really?
Yes, and I've had that same moth come in our yard before. And so I'm not sure. It's just a wonderful insect, and I've seen it in my hometown where we used to, like my family home. That's where I first encountered the hummingbird moth. It's an amazing little creature, and it looks like a hummingbird.
In a way. There's nothing like there's a group of them. Like there's not just one kind. Like there's this one that I saw was spectacular. Like it was just multicolored and just beautiful. And then there's some that are a little more brown and stuff, but they're all amazing. And I looked it up a little bit. Thank you for your question.
I'm just going to comment on some of the things that have been happening around here. A few weeks ago, green drops came rolling down our street around 9 a.m. in the morning. They were spraying for canker worms, and I had just gotten my buffer zone for our property. And even though a buffer zone is not much protection, but still, it's making a statement. And so my husband tried to communicate with the Green Drop drivers. They ignored him. They wouldn't even hear him. He's trying to
tell
them, don't spray here. But they sprayed across the street as well. And there was a woman walking on the sidewalk, and she got sprayed with the spray, and she was running away. And I thought, oh, my God, who is monitoring? Like, maybe there are people with buffer zone, and they're not even being honored. So it's making a mockery of the city's
terrible
that we have to apply for a buffer zone as if we're pests, you know, as if we're, they're doing us a great favor. And meanwhile, they're not being respected by the company Green Drop, which I suppose the city hires. So
they contracted them out, I guess, not city crews.
Yeah. And then, so the other thing, I looked up and found out that cankerworms, of course, they're not harmful. There's no problem with cankerworms. And I learned that they feed robins and jays, woodpeckers, titmice, chickadees, and nuthatches. And they're also, of course, the trees are home to squirrels and birds. You know, we need to educate the city somehow.
I think at this point, the biggest thing you can do is get your buffer zone. And then I think to call the city if you can, and just tell them it wasn't respected. Your buffer. I also, what neighborhood are you in?
The Wolseley.
Oh, geez. Cause I am too. And I did call in a buffer zone. I didn't see the trucks come around, but,
you live in the Wolseley?
Yes. I'm probably just a few blocks from you. I'm on Home Street.
I thought you.
I'm just in Dunatar most of the summer.
Okay, I had no idea. Well, that's good to know.
So that's
good
terrible.
To know people that are supporting buffer zones. That's for sure.
Yeah, I put on my Facebook page, whatever that's worth. I just tried to put out a reminder. You put the number for them to call. You make it as easy as possible, but. Let's talk about what they're doing. Is I don't think the spray, it's basically that larvaciding stuff. It's like bacillus something, and it's not going to hurt people. It's not going to hurt birds directly. Like if it's sprayed on them, it's not going to hurt them or the animals. But it will kill all the caterpillars. And what that's doing is you're basically removing the food supply for all the baby birds. That's that.
Yeah.
And so if you're wondering, I don't see a lot of birds in Wolseley. I see, we've got our usuals, you know, the English sparrow and some of the other ones.
We have a lot of sparrows, is that true? And there are ravens that have taken, ravens have sort of taken over the territory here. Crows are not as common as ravens. I'm not sure why, but.
Yeah, usually the ravens go north and the crows come in after for migration. But
I haven't seen any robins, anything like a robin, which we used to see. So something is happening to our bird population, and maybe we have to somehow get the message across to the city that they have to do better.
Yeah.
They need to be.
Well, people don't want, the bottom line is people don't like the worms because they make messes on their cars and they have to walk through webs. Well, I haven't seen one cankerworm yet this year. And I think I don't ban my trees. I think that's cruel.
I don't like to ban them either. I got into trouble with somebody that's a very, very diehard about banning trees, and he won't talk to me ever. But no, I think that first of all, you're getting all these insects that shouldn't be stuck on this glue around the tree. And then that's not right. And you're killing ladybugs and everything else, ants and so on.
The cankerworms aren't, there's not just cankerworms, it's a variety. Like we're killing, I think it's, I looked it up, it's like the morning cloak will get killed, that their caterpillar will get killed. Like all these different, it's a huge bunch of species out there. It's not just the cankerworm, which is a native, they're all native caterpillars. We don't here. We're not fighting an invasive species. So it's really wrong-headed. And I think we've upset the apple cart or whatever so much because now now the worms come back and there's nothing eating them because we've lost our bird population. You get like the cankerworm still will persist, but we've lost our, you know, like they'll, it's just all mixed up.
Yeah. So it is, and it's detrimental to the cause of
terribly
doing that. So.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really bad practice and a waste of time and money. And then you're also killing off the food supply for the birds. So what else can I say? I just and then, okay, while we're on this topic of the city spraying, the one that is actually super dangerous is the mosquito spraying. And they're not starting it yet, but we have a big mosquito. I'm sure we're going to have a big mosquito hatch this year. We have it out at Dunatar. We have lots of mosquitoes because of all the rainfall.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? And maybe it'll keep raining and they can't spray.
Well, people will be crying for it. And if you're growing a pollinator garden or anything like that, and the city truck comes along and sprays it with that pyrethium, it's going to kill everything. That's that.
Yeah,
so
I know
they don't just kill mosquitoes. That's it.
It's very upsetting because every time they spray, I've noticed a difference. Like, I can tell there's a difference in everything. All of a sudden, nature is dumbed down. There was a sense of poison in the air. I can feel it. I sense it. I despise it. And, you know, I feel so frustrated that this is happening. I don't know.
But so let's just encourage everybody to call in their buffer zone, and it's a work in progress to get this spraying stopped. But I think you're going to probably wrap me up pretty soon. I'm just looking at the time, but I should talk about where and what to buy. And so we can honor, you know, this whole project with the Butterfly Way project and with the Homegrown National Park. That's the project with Dr. Doug Tallamy. Should I go ahead and just say where to buy plants in Winnipeg or in Manitoba here?
Are you asking me a question?
Can I just go ahead and tell you some of the places we can go and find native plants?
Absolutely. I think this is doing us everybody a service.
I hope. I know. I'm just promoting these favorite places because they are treasures. So we have Prairie Flora in Toulon. We've got Prairie Originals in East Selkirk. And the Living Prairie Museum does have plant sales, so keep an eye on them. There's St. Norbert Market. Prairie Originals goes out to St. Norbert Market in June and July, I think, and they're selling plants. Prairie Shore Botanicals, if you're down in the south Manitoba, that's where some amazing tract of real tall grass prairie is. There's Laura Reeves down there. She's pretty famous plant person. Prairie Shore Botanicals. Have you talked to her on the show?
Yes, I've had her years ago, and I should be reconnecting with her because she's certainly an amazing environmentalist.
Yeah.
And she's written some books as well.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, so she sells plants. So that if you're down south for an adventure, you can connect with her. And you can also look online. And there's one thing I urge people not to do, and that's when you're out in the wild on a hike or something like that. Don't ever dig wild plants up, because a lot of them are rare. And so you know, you never know what you're doing if you're taking
like
out plants.
Lady slipper, eh? The
oh my gosh, that's the perfect example.
Yeah.
And if you dig it up and take it home, it probably won't live anyways, because it depends on the fungal, like all the different fungus, mycorrhiza in the soil and different elements in the soil around it to survive. Yeah. So anyway, but you didn't do it anyways. So that's the perfect example.
Yeah, they don't like to be transported anywhere.
No.
The native tiger lilies as well. We used to have a lot of them growing in the ditches and so on.
Yeah.
And on the, like, where on our farm where I grew up, there's a stone ridge. We always called it that. And it used to be a place where they had a lot of sheep. And there's a lot of rocks. And it's a natural, I think it's a wild grass. It's a tall grass prairie in itself.
Yeah.
And it stays, and it remains that way. So,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Whereabouts was your farm?
Fisher Branch. It's in the.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so you're the northern tip of the tall grass prairie up there.
I suppose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that something? Oh,
yeah.
What a special place to grow up.
It is. And always like to go up there in the summertime for my holidays. I'm just wondering, I was going to talk to you about something else, and that would be, there's also, maybe switching topics a little bit. You also indicated that Dr. Doug Tallamy has another book titled The Nature of Oaks, and he's recommending that in our time of climate change, nothing is better than oak trees for removing carbon from the atmosphere into the soil. So do you want to comment on the oak trees and some tips about oak trees and planting them and so on?
Okay. I guess he considers the oak the most powerful plant we have, the most powerful tree and plant we have. And that's because it provides so much to the ecosystem. It's a slow growing tree. It hosts more insect and larval life than any other tree. It really contributes to carbon capture because of its root system and leaves. So it does so much. So here in Manitoba, we have one oak, and it's called the Burr Oak. And so it's a gorgeous tree. We've got, I'm just looking around here at Dunatar in my backyard, and I've got a bunch of them are growing, and they're probably a couple hundred years old. They're big old trees. They're just lovely. Yeah, we're so lucky, so lucky. And I actually did a bit of a renegade thing. There was this tree program where you can buy trees through, get discount trees for your yard, and what's called Trees Please, or I should have had it written down. And so I got a little oak tree, and my neighbor and I planted it on a boulevard where a tree had been missing for 15 years. So we put it there, and to grow it, you really need to follow a lot of instructions. You know, you need to plant it very carefully, and I hope it survives. There's all these tips and tricks. And so I followed my instructions, you know, to the T, and we'll see how it does.
Mm-hmm. And apparently you should actually plant them in the fall, I believe, because there's
more
damage to the roots. They can sort of settle in roots during, you know, by the springtime. They can.
Yeah, I know. I was reading that going like, oh, dear, here it's kind of in June. And they say plant when the trees are, in dormancy. So I didn't do that. So let's just hope this little baby tree lives. And what Dr. Tallamy suggests is forego the tree part, just plant acorns.
And that'll take a while, but, you know, and that's the way it goes. Well, you know, we need to have another conversation, Wendy. We're running out of time, and I think you also wanted to mention the issue of the LeMay Forest, and then we may
I did.
Yeah,
I did.
I don't know.
And do I have, like, just one quick minute for that?
Sure.
On Monday, the city is going to decide whether to allow development on this 22-acre forest in St. Norbert. And this is this piece of land that's actual intact river bottom forest, which is super rare. And it's got like probably close to 14,000 trees in it. The ecosystem is unbelievable. There's birds, insects. It's just, and actually, in acknowledging today is Indigenous Day in Manitoba, or Canada, I believe. There's people that have been using this land for ceremonies and still have been using it for years. And so Monday, if you want to write in, you have to do it before noon. You have to put a submission to the city today. Or
Oh my gosh. You
can just write your city. I know, it's kind of crazy. But today's the deadline at noon. Or you can just write your counselor and you can show up on Monday just as support to the LeMay Forest folks who have been working so hard to preserve this amazing forest. So it would be a huge loss to the city. Plus, look at that park space that we'd get. Like, it's there's just so many plus, so many reasons. Plus, there's a cemetery within holding probably many, many children who died in an orphanage that was located on the ground. So there's like, I don't even know how many reasons there are to keep this forest, but look up LeMay Forest. They've got a web page, and just to learn about it, and hopefully we can save it. That's all I have to say.
Well, thank you so much for bringing this to our attention, and thank you so much for joining us this morning. The time has just flown by, and we're going to have a song. I don't know if you, John has a song ready to play, but thank you, Wendy, and
Jane.
We'll move forward.
Yeah, but I just wanted to say the gardening is a joyful thing, and it can make you happy.
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Goodbye, Jeff, Wendy.
All right, see you, Wendy. The song that was suggested, I believe it's called No Wrong Answers by Matlock. I will play it now.
Oh, great. Thank you.
I've been high and I've been low. I don't know where to go. All that I know is there's no wrong answer. Thank you.
Yeah, you're still on.
Okay. You're listening. You've been listening to CKUW 95.9 FM, and we were talking to Wendy Bulow. And we're heading to the end of our program. I just wanted to talk a little bit about gluten, and I don't have very much time. So I will just mention that gluten is a protein that is found in certain grains, especially wheat, prominently in wheat, and rye and barley to a lesser extent. And gluten is really actually a couple of proteins that are activated when you mix them with water and you stir them. They're actually two components of two types of proteins, gliadin, I think, and glutenin, if I'm correct. And they're like two strands, and as you're mixing this flour, these two strands come together, intertwine, and entrap air in their as they form this particular rope. And the air, when you bake the flour, the dough, the air expands and the gluten stretches, and until it completely solidifies by baking. And so this is the importance of gluten, is to give rise, to give volume to your baking. So if you were to bake with rye flour, for instance, it doesn't have much gluten, you would never see anything rising. But with wheat flour in particular, there is, this is what happens. So this is the important thing to know about it, is the importance of gluten in baking. So the other aspect of gluten is that certain people are allergic to it, and it becomes very difficult for them. It is very bad for them to be eating gluten because it affects their intestinal integrity, and it creates pain and all kinds of complications. So when they're sensitive to gluten. So there are other ways of making flour that don't take gluten. And the other types of flour would be potato flour, arrowroot starches that provide stickiness and adhesion. And chickpea flour is another one, is a source of protein and iron, but it doesn't provide, it has that nutritional value, but it doesn't have the effect of making it more adhesive. And there's also rice flour, which has iron as well. So there's a few flours that you can use and that you can mix together to replace wheat flour. And so I have a recipe here for making your own flour, gluten-free flour. And you should go to places like Bulk Barn, or where you can get them in bulk, actually, and buy them in batches, and then you can mix them and make your own flour. So if you take 3 cups of potato starch or tapioca starch, that's one thing, this is a recipe, 3 cups of potato starch or tapioca starch, and 2 cups of chickpea flour, and 2 cups of brown or white rice flour, and 1 cup of arrowroot starch. And you place all the ingredients in a large bowl, and you stir with a dry wire whisk so that they combine evenly. And then you store in the sealed, airtight containers at room temperature, or you can put it in the refrigerator. Then when you're going to be using it, you should shake it before using, just to make sure everything is blended together. And a few other tips when using these types of gluten-free flours, you should reduce the oven temperature about 25 degrees Fahrenheit and bake a little longer. So a reduction in the temperature. And the other thing that is often recommended is to add a quarter or a half a teaspoon of xanthan gum or a half a teaspoon of guar gum. Now, these substances, they can be found in many stores. I know Bulk Barn has them, and they are useful because they help the ingredients to adhere better together. So that's the reason why you would use these substances. And you have to cool the quick breads after you bake them as quickly, completely, before slicing them to avoid a gummy texture. So I don't have a recipe. We are running out of time, but I'd like to thank our guest, Wendy Bulow, for joining us this morning. And thank you, John, for co-hosting this morning as well.
And, for sure, anytime.
Yeah, so I guess we're at the end of our program again. And maybe you might want to give us the weather one more time.
All right, I'll just do my outro now. You have been listening to Wooden Spoon, sponsored by Mary Jane's Cooking School on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. For our podcast, please go to ckuw.ca, type Wooden Spoon in the search bar, and the show will be up in just a few hours. Till then, this is John Dick and Mary Jane Eason saying bye for now, and thanks for listening.